And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Buffalo Beat. This is a extra... extraordinary edition of the Buffalo Beat because the Bills have made one of the biggest moves that they have over the last 4 or 5 years now in trading away their top receiver, Stephon Diggs, to the Houston Texans, sending away an additional fifth round pick and a sixth round pick, and in return, getting a second round pick in 2025 that belonged to the Minnesota Vikings. So this is quite honestly a huge story, and this happened on Wednesday, and the fallout is still kind of going from here. And I figured it's Friday, it's around lunchtime, depending where you are. I figured let's just all buckle in and do as much of a Q&A as possible about what the Bills are going to do from here, what could possibly be down the pipeline with from a draft perspective. If you have questions on some prospects, I've watched a ton of receivers, not all of them just yet, but a ton of them, and have an idea of what maybe the Bills might be up the Bills' alley. So if you have any of those questions, all you have to do is type in your questions right in this live dialogue box on The Athletic, and I will get to as many as I can throughout the duration here. So just type away, and then I will get to as many as possible within the time frame of this show. But the Bills, you know, when you look at how big of a story this is, just from a background perspective, the entire motivation of the trade is, you know, contested from no matter how you look at things. The overall outlook of, and if you have any, I'm not sure if there's anyone having problems with sending in questions, just because I can't see any questions sent in so far. So, by all means, keep on firing away. Okay, there we go. I see some now. But the overall motivation of the Bills and how they are sculpting this 2024 season, what this entire offseason has been about, at least to me, from the moves that they made, and you can only base their motivation based on actions, and that is to clear as much space in 2025 as they can. Did they have to push some money into 2025? Yeah, they did, but they tried to do as little of that as possible. And with a lesser trade like Ryan Bates, with the trade of Diggs, it's clearing all that money off their books in 2025, in which they can become real players. So this was probably their only opportunity to get a legitimate resource out of a team for Stephon Diggs right now, because at this point, he just turned 30. There has not been a drop-off in his play. Some will argue the production aspect of it, but you watch him on film, still a very good player. And he's going to do very well in Houston this year, I would imagine. But the whole notion is you should probably make that move a year before you want to make that move to maximize your return. Because next year, if they would have hung on and waited, he would have been 31, turning 32 the following November in that season. You're probably looking at getting at maybe a third round pick, but probably not. Probably a day three pick. And at that point, you lost that window. So they took advantage of the window. They realized 2025 is a year that they can really take a big march back into the free agency realm and go from there. So that's some of their motivation. And obviously there's the drama that sometimes follows Stefon Diggs. I will say this about Stefon, and you know, I'll get to your questions in a moment once they start to rack up here, because I have to leave the room and go back to it just to see the updated questions from one of the next. Because he is somewhat of he's a divisive personality. And I think he's a little misunderstood. I think he's a really smart dude. I think he's pretty thoughtful. He's very self-aware. And he knows exactly where he is in the scope of things. And I think that little bit of misunderstood to him can also lead to some misunderstanding, perhaps within a locker room, perhaps within the fan base or whatnot. But I will say every time I spoke with him, it wasn't like he was a malcontent or anything like that. Just a nice dude that, I think is a little misunderstood. And so I'll leave it there with that. So let's get to some of your questions now with what the Bills do now after Stefon Diggs has been traded away. David writes in, do the Bills use their draft assets to trade up into the top 10 of this draft? And which wide receiver is the best fit for this team? I think there are multiple very good fits. And I look at a lot of the, I look at the perceived top four, which is Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, and Brian Thomas Jr. I think all of those guys can check the box of not only being able to fill in a starting position for the Bills immediately, but also having the potential to become that number one guy. Probably more so the first three I mentioned than Brian Thomas Jr., but he still has that potential because, you know, it's so fresh into it, and you could definitely see there's a little bit more of a ceiling, might be a little bit more of a projection with him than it is the other guys too. So do they trade it in the top 10? I am not ruling it out one single bit, David, because we know that Brandon Bean feels very strong, and the Bills for that matter, they feel very strongly that this is a passing league, and they know that having a top tier wide receiver just makes the whole operation easier for Josh Allen, for the other receivers, puts more of a strain on the defense, everything like that. And now that the Bills have what could amount to be an early second round pick in 2025. And this is a point that I think is important here, because the Vikings, they already traded assets to get a second first round pick. Now, the wonder is, are they going to use number 11 and number 23 to move up to get a quarterback? That's what everyone anticipates, just because their quarterback depth chart right now consists of Sam Darnold, who is a journeyman quarterback at this point. But even if they were to trade up, you're looking at either Sam Darnold starting or a rookie quarterback. And the odds that a rookie quarterback leads them to a huge win season is not always the greatest. You know, CJ Stroud, I think, was a bit of an anomaly last year. Maybe it winds up the rookie quarterback does enough nice things after they get settled to get them to near 500, even still. That's a early to mid second round pick in next year's draft. And the bullish case would be if the Vikings get frozen out of the quarterback market in the draft and have to go in with Sam Darnold or have to settle for taking one at 11 that they weren't really super invested in. And then suddenly you're looking at what could be a pretty nice pick atop that second round. So having that, along with another second round pick and their first round pick next year, and then looking at what they are anticipating to be at least one, if not two, additional compensatory picks for next year for Leonard Floyd and Gabe Davis. Right now, Over the Cap is projecting those as a fourth and fifth round pick. So for the Bills, they're probably looking at it going, okay, there's some additional ammo. It could definitely be the motivation that Brandon Bean needs to rationalize making a big move up the board. We know he's not scared of it. He doesn't have a ton of early draft ammo, so he's going to have to dip into his future pot to be able to do it. And I am not ruling out a single thing, because this is this wide receiver class, those top three guys especially, you can make a strong case that those top three guys in their individual year would be the no doubt number one receiver of their class. Definitely for Neighbors, and obviously for Marvin Harrison Jr., because he's the number one class in a loaded class, number one receiver in a loaded class. But if Bean feels very strongly about someone and is excited about that individual player, then he is going to see what it takes to move up. I think he would trade away his future first round pick for the right player, someone that they believe can become that number one receiver, because of how valuable it is, not only from an on-field perspective, but also from a cap standpoint, because that player would then be on a four-year rookie deal, conceivably as the number one target for Josh Allen, while Josh Allen's contract balloons. And then by the time you have to pay the receiver, you're probably turning the roster over in other places. Because the price of admission for a great wide receiver right now, whew, it is up there. Like, Gabe Davis just got paid $13 million per year APY. Will he see all of that? To be determined. But that's the going rate for an above average to good receiver. For an elite guy, yeah, it's up there. So that's why I think all of these reasonings, having the future picks to play with now, having ample cap space in 2025 to be able to be a free agent player, knowing that you're probably going to have, well, if you make that move, that what you hope to be your number one receiver on your roster without assigning too much of your cap space to it. If they go through with that, let's say they move up for Roma Dunze, just for instance here. So then they have, in 2025, Adunze, Khalil Shakir, and Curtis Samuel on their roster. Their top cap hit would be Curtis Samuel of their top three, by a lot. Well, maybe not by a lot, but at least by a little. So it's in the under 10 range. How about that? Whereas you can go through the rest of your off-season bidding and probably spend a bit more than you have. Like, the last two off seasons, their top free agent additions, when the new league year opened up, have been Connor McGovern and Curtis Samuel. And those are the very definition of those mid-level contract signings. Very justifiable contracts to those guys to get a starter in return. They like what they got from McGovern. Was he the best player last year? No. But they kind of knew what they were getting. Curtis Samuel has some really interesting dynamics to his skill set. Has he put it all together for a huge season? No. And that's why he got paid what he did. So there's a little bit of projection involved, just like there was last year. But in 2025, I think they could be a real free agent player, which just fuels this even more. All right. Chris M. writes in, Brian Thomas Jr. or Adonai Mitchell? I'm personally a Brian Thomas Jr. guy because I think with Adonai Mitchell, there's just a little bit of hesitation for me just from his overall profile. A lot of it stems from not crazy about his route running or his separation throughout the entire route tree. It's just, to me, I just don't know that there is enough of a case or enough of what I've seen from him on film to make me go, yeah, I think you can project him forward into becoming that bona fide number one receiver. Could it be a solid number two? Yeah, sure. I think the Bills need to swing higher than a solid number two, which is why I tend to veer towards Brian Thomas Jr., who has the explosiveness. He has the size. He has a lot of the things you're looking for, big playability. And I think that overwhelming potential is what kind of leads me there. Is he still a scarier prospect than, say, the top three guys that we've been talking about? Sure, absolutely. And there is still some projection involved, but I'm more in the camp of Brian Thomas Jr. over Adonai Mitchell. I just think he's an overall better prospect, but if the Bills can, and if they're willing, I would absolutely try to get one of those top three guys. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers are absolute studs in the making. Roma Dunze, I think, is going to be a really good starter in the NFL. Is he going to be a star? I don't know. Could be, but those top two guys are, I think, have legit star potential. Okay, Alexander writes in, do you foresee the Bills still being Super Bowl contenders after considering all of the losses this offseason? In Alexander's opinion, it all depends on how they replenish the wide receiver room. I think that will go a long way, Alexander. I do. I'll agree with you there. What they do to help Josh Allen, like they can't just think to themselves, oh, Josh is just going to raise the level of everybody around him. We haven't seen him do that just yet. Like there's always been that security blanket of having Stephon Diggs there when things aren't going right. And sometimes there were obviously games down the stretch last season where Diggs wasn't as big of a contributor, but in some gotta have it plays, you had a really good idea where the Bills were going with the ball, and that was to Stephon Diggs. So that is now removed. And Allen is now at the point in his career where he needs to be that guy that helped get the most out of players. When they brought Stephon Diggs, that was in the effort to get Josh Allen to pop, to become that franchise guy. Because he was showing a lot of signs towards getting there, but arming him with a number one wide receiver that already had the in-game reps and showed he could do it, that was a big motivating factor for that. But now Allen is in a different realm of his career where he is well-established, clearly one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and is now faced with the challenge of uplifting the talent around him without having that huge megastar of a wide receiver. I know people will bring up what what the Chiefs just did with Patrick Mahomes, but he at the very least had Travis Kelce, and Kelce has been his locked-in guy forever. So that's why I'm with you on that, Alexander. They need to have something to rely on from a pass-catching perspective. Because right now, they have a lot of projection. Khalil Shakir developed nicely. Is he a number one? No. Is he a number two? Not sure. Is he a good slot receiver that can pop for some big plays here and there? Yeah, definitely. Dalton Kincaid showed a lot of potential last year, but is he going to become Travis Kelce? That is a tough projection. Can he be a major player in the offense? Sure. Absolutely. He has that sort of game to him. And I was wildly impressed by him as soon as Dawson Knox went down with an injury. And then after that, Curtis Samuel. Like, this is a guy who has popped for some huge games every once and again, and then tends to disappear. That's just been who he's been in the NFL. So there's some projection there too. But they definitely need to do something. They are not done in the wide receiver room. And if they are, that is a massive mistake on their part and doing themselves a disservice.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
So can they still be a Super Bowl contender this year? Yes, I think they could, because a lot of it depends on injury luck, as we've seen in past years. A lot of it depends on quarterback play and health of said quarterback. And I think they're finally gearing themselves toward not putting all of their resources towards the defensive side of the ball. Like, they did that for so long while Josh Allen was coming up in his career, but what has it yielded them? They now have, if you look up and down their defensive roster and the defensive depth chart, this is probably the weakest it's been since, what, 2018? 2017? Right now, they've got one of Von Miller or AJ Epinesa starting, which is fine. Good, not great. They've got a pair of safeties who are massively unproven. They have Christian Benford in the lineup, who looked really good down the stretch of last season, but hasn't put together an entire year. Terrell Bernard, who I think his big plays kind of overshadowed some of the weaknesses of his game. And I've mentioned this before, but kind of the reverse factor of Tremaine Edmonds, where a lot of the great things he did went unnoticed. And then, you know, the big criticism on him was not being able to make the big plays. I think it's kind of vice versa with Terrell Bernard. So that's, and then you've got guys who are aging a bit. Daquan Jones is up there in age. Matt Milano is getting up there in age. Rasul Douglas is in his 30s now. there are some major questions on the defensive side of the ball. So the Bills are showing some, are likely to show even more after the whatever they add at receiver, some real, a real preference to adding to the offensive side, because that's going to be what takes them over the next step. So yeah, I'm with you. The wide receiver needs to be established, and if they find someone that's worthwhile, then I think that can help take them to where they want to go, or at least challenge for it. But if they don't find that guy, and they're going to have some money to spend and might be for like a defensive end or something like that, I think those are the two spots to me where it's like, okay, if they're serious about getting toward the goal of winning the Super Bowl in 2024, which it certainly sounds like Brandon Bean is, despite getting rid of some of these guys like Mitch Morse and Tre'Davious White and Jordan Poyer and now Stephon Diggs, then those are the two positions I think they have to address. All right, next question. Let me just refresh these real quick. Next question comes from Sarah, who writes in, which position in round one besides quarterback is least likely? You can just sit there and go, yeah, running back, because that's the, it doesn't seem likely that anyone's going to take a running back anywhere close to the first round this year. I'll probably go with cornerback, just because I think they want to see, and that'll be music to people's ears, I'm sure, because people are probably sick of them taking cornerbacks in the draft at this point, especially after Kyrie Elam a couple years ago. But they have Rasul Douglas under contract. They have Christian Benford under contract through 2025. I really think they want to find out what Kyrie Elam has in his game. And by the way, sneaky move by Kyrie Elam, changing his jersey to number 5. You know, could that be the catalyst, changing to his college number? We'll see. But I think they want to see what Elam has from a practice perspective before they make a decision on both him and on Rasul Douglas. Because Douglas is out of contract after this upcoming season. Could they try and extend him? Sure. But the better solution for them would be to go into 2025 with Benford starting and Elam, if he proves he's worth it, to be starting. Because at that point, then you have the fifth year option on Kyrie Elam that you can fire up next offseason if he deems himself worthy. Can try and extend Christian Benford before he hits some major value, and that's could be the future of your cornerback room. So I'll go with cornerback out of that one. Derek writes in, are guys like Brandon Ayuk and T. Higgins even possible? Given $31 million to not have Diggs on your team, I don't see how they fit a veteran wide receiver in for 2024. It's absolutely possible, Derek. Like, it all depends on motivation and what they want this thing to look like. Because right now, after the Diggs deal, once June 1st rolls around, the Bills are going to have somewhere around $13 to $14 million in cap space, not including the rookie class. So figure, just from an effective cap space standpoint, probably around $10 to $11 million. You can absolutely do a sign and trade and structure the first year of that deal for whichever player you get to make sense for you in the first year, and then have the bigger hits in upcoming seasons. That's how they've done all of their contracts. It's a pretty standard operating procedure within the NFL. Some teams like to do a pay-as-you-go thing, but that's less common. Most teams will lessen the cap hit in year one because they're giving out a ton of cash and have the cap hits grow over time. So yeah, it's definitely possible. My wonder is how plausible it could be, based on not only having to give up the resource, the draft resource to do it, but also giving up the resources of the flexibility in free agency that you would get by going with a standard rookie. So I'm not ruling it out, because obviously Brandon Bean is not going to put his best foot forward in any capacity. If he finds a good enough deal with the player and with the team, then sure. But it might just be at the point of their build that targeting a young receiver that has the potential to turn into your number one, having him on a cost control deal, and then moving on from there and spending elsewhere, that might be the thing that speaks most to Brandon Bean at this point of their build. And then if that young receiver doesn't work out, you can pivot in a couple of years and look to a bigger name free agent, because at that point you're probably thinking to yourself that you're not going to pay that player you drafted a large lump sum of money. But it's just the next stage here and keeping it moving. They have not invested outside of trading their first in 2020 for Stephon Diggs. They have not invested a high pick into a receiver. The last time they did so, Brandon Bean was not in charge of the draft. He was not even employed by the Bills, and that was Zay Jones. The earliest they have picked one has been Gabe Davis, or earliest that Bean has picked one has been Gabe Davis. So I think the time for an investment in that position should be here. But like I said, not ruling out the potential Ayuk, T. Higgins scenario. I would tend to favor Ayuk more than Higgins, just because I think the Bills tend to look for players who are excellent separators. And T. Higgins is still a good player, don't get me wrong, but his big thing is contested catchability. He's awesome at it. It's the reason why he's become such a good player in the NFL. Does he have number one potential? Kind of question that. Does Ayuk have number one potential? I think he absolutely does. So, but you're going to have to pay in both ways for both of those guys. And are the Bills willing to do that? I guess we'll see. Dylan writes in, how did the restructure of Diggs' contract work? Since when does a trade allow you to just redo a contract without cap implications / dead money? And what's your opinion of how that late news affects the compensation? It's not about a trade triggering an event where teams can restructure the deal. Basically, what that is the Texans going to Diggs' representation, which is Adisa Bakari, his agent, and saying, okay, we're thinking about doing this, and this is how this can benefit you, and this is how this can benefit us. So the Texans basically pitched the idea of, you are due $3.5 million guaranteed on your salary next year. We're going to put that into this year's deal, including your guaranteed base salary, which is $18.5 million. And to do so, cancel the final 3 years, giving the player another crack at free agency and, you know, giving him the whatever it is, the $22.5-23 million in base salary that he'll make this season before getting a chance to go to free agency next year. The player has to agree to it. It's just a very basic restructure. It's not as though the Texans were like, all right, we're going to do this and this now that we have your rights. The player has to agree to it as well. So I'm sure it was a lot of belief from Diggs in his ability that he's going to be able to completely show out with this Houston Texans offense and with CJ Stroud, put himself in a position to make another good size contract next year. Because if you also look at it from his perspective, he was only guaranteed $3.5 million next year. The Texans easily could have walked away from that if things didn't go right. So by bumping that $3.5 million up to this year, it gives Diggs the opportunity. Like, think about it like what Kirk Cousins would do with his free agency. Like, just short-term contracts to try and get as many bites at the apple, because when you sign a free agent contract, it usually comes with a lot of guaranteed money, especially up front. And I would wager Stephon Diggs is probably going to make more than $3.5 million up front next year, if he does what I think he's going to do this year from a production standpoint. So that's how they do it. It's not just the team says, this is what's happening with your contract. The player has to agree to it too.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Paul writes in a theoretical question. Do you think that the Bills / NFL have changed philosophies on wide receivers from separators / spacemakers back towards larger bodied wide receivers based on how defenses are playing so much too high shell? I think that's an interesting theory. But for the most part, I think it really depends on the quarterback and the overall philosophy of the organization. For the Bills, I'm not sure we're ever going to see them go back to a Kelvin Benjamin type player. Not like, of course, not Kelvin Benjamin, the form that he was here. But that type of player just did not work all that well with Josh. I think Allen, because of how creative he can be post-snap, needs a guy who's going to have some ample space to where that cushion sometimes gets closed in on. Because sometimes Allen throws from not an even base whatsoever. If the Bills can find someone who can separate and go up the ladder and get it occasionally, that's plenty of check marks there. Like, that's why I think Malik Nabers is just so fascinating for them, because he can do all of that. It would cost a pretty price to move up to go get that guy. But at the end of the day, I still think the Bills favor separation slash yards after catch ability, as opposed to bigger bodied, go up and get it against a safety or a cornerback and an oncoming safety. Because eventually, the too high shell phenomenon is going to move on to the next thing. So you just want to be prepared and doing what the quarterback does best and does best with. And I think that that type of player, the separator, space maker, that you're talking about, that is what they will ultimately veer toward. If they wind up going with a guy like, Keon Coleman, then it will signal that they have changed their mind about all this. But that's not the type of receiver they have targeted since that Benjamin thing went down. And I mean, they just went after Curtis Samuel, too, who's another one of the separators slash space creators. So I would be, my hypothesis is that they'll continue to look for that type of player. All right, next question comes from Nexus, who writes in, how long do you think Josh Allen will play on a top level if he doesn't get injured and the Bills need to do a big transition? I think there is a lot of years left here for Josh Allen. I don't think his window is closing in on him anytime soon. And as long as he takes care of himself from a hits perspective and not doing the egregious flips over players and trying to hurdle players and trying to get an extra yard and taking a big hit to do so, if he gets those things out of his game and instead, takes controlled tackles, goes out of bounds, slides, things like that, I think he could easily play to like the 34, 35 year old area. The mobility wouldn't always be there by the end of that, but I think he's done enough as a pocket passer to when he has to dial into that facet of his game as his primary means, that he'll still be a really effective player. So I don't think this is an impending doom situation for the Bills by any means. I think they still have a good size window. But I do think that they know that they need to make a push here, because quarterback health and Josh Allen, always being healthy is not guaranteed. So they can't afford to waste a year of it. And I think even though they traded Stephon Diggs, that's why I think there's going to be a little bit of an emphasis here to get aggressive, perhaps even on draft day, and then post June 1st free agency to get some players around Josh Allen that will make 2024 a year that they can try to push for a Super Bowl title. Okay, Matthew wrote in, can we listen to this recorded later if we can't stay the whole time? Yes, this will be on demand wherever you find your podcast, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify, right here on the Athletic app, whatnot. So yeah, by all means, if you can't stay the whole time, it will be up on the RSS feed when we do so. Next question comes from, what do you think about the Bills sticking at 28 and trading up to 50 to get two quality wideouts instead of moving up for just one? That's from Jordan. I see where your mind is at, getting two cracks at it here. But I don't know that the Bills, especially in having both Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel, who they invested probably a two-year deal into, I just don't know that they're going to be able to justify going wide receiver. Because if you're taking a receiver in the second round after just taking one in the first round, then who's the odd man out? Is it Khalil Shakir, who you really like? Is it Curtis Samuel? Is it the second round player? Is it the first round player? My guess, if they double dip, would be something more along the lines of taking a player in the first couple of rounds and then taking another on day three to take advantage of the depth of the class, which doesn't come with as many expectations on that player. And they can naturally develop into a wide receiver three, four, or five, depending on how well they hit. Because if you're going back to back, wide receiver, the idea is that those two guys are going to be your top two guys for the foreseeable. And if that doesn't happen, then that's a waste pick. So, yeah, I see the logic behind it, but I think rather than having two, a B to B plus prospect and a B minus to B prospect, as opposed to having one A plus prospect, I'd rather have the one A plus prospect. But that is just me. I'm more of a swing big sort of guy, but, we'll see. We'll see exactly what they're looking at by the time the draft gets here. All right. The Bills have 10 draft picks. How many players do they actually end up taking? That's from Kyle. I'll go with 8. I think that's a good spot. I mean, I guess it depends on if they wind up dealing a future pick as opposed to a this year's pick to move up. Maybe they sit with all of their picks, but I think 8 is a sweet spot there because I do think that there's somewhere between 7 to 9 spots on the roster that can be earned by a rookie this year. We've seen in past years that the Bills have just absolutely, they have not had any room for their late round picks, but I think this year is different. I think the back end of their roster is weaker than it has been in past years to where, you know, some of these fifth or some of these sixth or even a seventh round player could wind up making it if they hit the right situation. So I'll go with 8. I think that's, let's go down the roster. They could use another running back who could easily supplant Darrington Evans as the third running back. That's one. A wide receiver or two, because right now their top four is Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel, Mac Collins, Justin Shorter. Then you have KJ Hamler, and who the heck knows what you're getting out of him, and Andy Isabella, probably fringe roster guys at best. So potentially two receivers you can find a spot for. You can find a spot for an interior offensive lineman that you draft. After they just signed L. Collins, that probably takes tackle out of the equation here. But an interior offensive lineman, absolutely. You can find a spot for a defensive end. You can certainly find a spot for a defensive tackle. You can find a spot for another linebacker. You can find a spot for a fourth cornerback. And also a spot for a safety. So what did I list there? Safety, cornerback, linebacker, defensive tackle, defensive end, interior offensive line, two wide receivers, and a running back. I just got to 9 positions right there. So yeah, somewhere between 7 to 9, I think, is what they'll end up with. And that's why I'm going to land on 8, just to play it safe. Okay, next question. Sean writes in, will the Bills sign a true fullback and start running 22 personnel all the time? Bring back bully ball. I don't think so, Sean. I think the ways of bully ball, I don't think the Bills are going to be on the cutting edge of doing so. I think if you're going to look at a team who might want to try and win that way, it might just be the Los Angeles Chargers with Jim Harbaugh. But and who has Greg Roman as his offensive coordinator. And the run game has been Roman's calling card for several years in the NFL. But do I think the Bills are going to go all in on bully ball? They don't have the running backs to do it. They don't have the fullback to do it. They have an incredible quarterback. It's just, I don't think that's going to happen. Okay. Josh writes in, why not trade down and move up again in the second round? Why not get two wide receivers instead of selling everything for just one. Get two of Ladd, McConkey, Coleman, Jalen Polk. I think it's Ricky Pearsall and Xavier Leggett, etc. Again, I see the logic behind it, but also think about who the general manager of the team is. Think of what he has done in his past drafts. I'm not saying it's right by any means, but there is a very clear tendency from the general manager of the team to not trade down from where he is in the first round. It has not happened. It's happened in other rounds. So sure. But usually he lands on somebody he really likes and wants to go get. 2018, trade up. Twice. Let's go all the way back. I'm just bringing up the draft history so I don't miss anything here. 2018, trade up twice, Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds. Okay. Ed Oliver stood pat, probably flirted with the idea of trading up. Wound up feeling they were in a good spot by the time Detroit got on the clock and didn't. Or by the time it was seventh or something and didn't feel like that they needed to move up. Kaiir Elam, another trade up. They've also traded up in different rounds. Oh, Dalton Kincaid, another trade up. They've traded up in other rounds to go get guys that they're really into. Cody Ford, trade up. Dawson Knox, trade up. Zach Moss, trade up. There's a very clear tendency here. So that's why, when you're saying, why won't they do this? Or why couldn't they do this? Conceivably, they could. By all means, they could. But if you were a betting person, after the Bills just traded away their top receiver, what do you think would be the way that Brandon Bean winds up going based on what we know about him? So that's why when we're talking about the idea of moving up for a receiver, that's why I'm geared toward that way, because that's clearly the history that the Bills under Brandon Bean have showed us. Jeffrey writes in, does Brandon Bean already have deals in place to move up? Maybe, never know. Or maybe it's, I'm sure he's making calls and going, okay, what will it take? And if you guys feel comfortable with moving down, he does this every single year and just trying to price out exactly what it's going to take to move up and down. It's having the answers to the test before you get to the actual test. So that way, or studying really hard for the test before getting to the test. And that way, when you're on the clock or another team's on the clock and they're going, hey, we're looking at moving down. You want to do that? You want to do that deal we're talking about? Then that way they can sit there and go, okay, yeah, we like the value of that trade. And from that point forward. So yeah, he's probably going to have conversations over the next several weeks just to see what it would take to move up to a specific spot. They'll also have a pretty good idea of how teams value their picks. You know, there's various trade value charts out there. Some teams develop their own. It's really just finding out exactly what value makes sense to those individual teams. And it's just a lot of just conversations, texts, phone calls. Exactly what you would do in a dynasty rookie draft, honestly. pretty much same deal, just with millions of dollars on the line. That's basically what it is. Michael writes in, what do you think of Xavier Leggett as a prospect for the Bills? Leggett is one of the guys I have gotten to so far, and his yards after catch ability is the thing that makes me go, okay, this could be something. But what holds me back with him is his route running is not great. Separation, also not great. But if you just want a pure speed guy that once you do get the ball in his hands, that you can see him take it to the house. Sure. That it really depends on what they're looking for. To have 4.39 speed at 221 pounds of the combine is extremely impressive. Do I think he's a first round type of player? No, I don't, because of some of the limitations of his game. He's also an older prospect. He's already over 23 years old. Whereas you look at guys near the top, Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't 22. Malik Nabers isn't 21. Roma Dunze isn't 22 just yet. Adonai Mitchell isn't 22 just yet. It's not like a non-starter for being 23 years old. Like, they took Dalton Kincaid and he was an older prospect. But Kincaid was also the best tight end the best tight end prospect, I should say, in what many consider to be one of the strongest tight end classes we've ever seen last year. I don't know. Leggett to me would be intriguing at 60, or if they move down into the third round at 28, probably not for me, just based on some of the limitations of this game. Okay. That was another question about Ayuk. I answered that earlier in the episode. I'll move on. Let's see. Kyle writes, is Harrison for sure the first wide receiver off the board, or could he slide down a few spots for the Bills to trade up and grab? My guess is that Harrison probably will be the first wide receiver selected. I mean, very clearly, if you are a team picking near the top of the order, you're in need of a wide receiver. Like, I look at Arizona as a perfect destination for him, because they're a team that's trying to find their way back. Can't imagine that last year what happened did wonders for the fan base. Gets people excited. He's a name because of his name. And that's not the reason why he would wind up being the first wide receiver taken, but it's a contributing piece that you have to acknowledge, at least. He's the son of one of the best wide receivers that we have seen in the game. Like a top 30 receiver all time, probably. And I might be being too safe with that. When Marvin Harrison was in his prime with Indianapolis, he was amazing. So there's that, plus the actual game to his game, that makes you go, okay, this guy might be really legit. 6'3", 209 pounds, can do basically everything you want on the football field. And the name recognition. I think it all works. I think there's a lot of, there was some wonder if maybe Nabers could move up ahead of him. And I like Malik Nabers a lot, by the way. But my guess is for a team like the Cardinals, that just makes way too much sense for them. Way too much. All right. What teams could you see being interested in trading down from a top 10 to 12 pick to the Bills' 28th pick at this stage? Let me bring up the draft order real quick. You're saying 10 to 12. Well, I certainly don't think the Jets are going to do them any favors with that. So I won't say them. Let's see here. I could see the Giants being willing to move down from 6 if they miss out on the quarterbacks. I could see the Titans being open to moving down because they have done so in the past. And they are short a pick in the mid-third round. So 7. I could see Atlanta at 8 being willing to move down to take advantage of teams trying to jump Chicago to get a wide receiver. Jump Chicago and the Jets to do so. Minnesota, I don't think they're going to be going anywhere unless that 11th pick winds up becoming a different team who would then be willing to trade down. I think you could, the Broncos possibly, but at that point, you are getting into the zone of, okay, how early is too early to go get a guy like Brian Thomas Jr.? I think you're probably going to have to, just to be safe, think it's going to be somewhere in the top 17 to get a wide receiver, to get Brian Thomas. It might be a little bit earlier than that, but that's the way it's kind of looking right now. The Colts seem like a prime wide receiver destination. So maybe 13 with the Raiders is another one to look at if you're looking to get up there, to get that guy. Or if Roma Dunze falls or Malik Nabers falls, I'm not expecting that to happen. I think both of those guys probably wind up in the top 10. And if one of them fall, probably within the top 12. But, you know, that's pretty much the range here. You have to look at motivation, what those teams need compared to what's available, everything along those lines. So the Falcons are definitely one of those because it's like, okay, they could use a cornerback, but could they benefit from getting additional resources to move down and then just still take a solid cornerback prospect at, say, 28? I think that there's a lot of emphasis towards that. So those are some teams to look out for. All right, I've got time for 2 more. Let's see. Back. I have to keep refreshing. Kyle writes, what free agent wide receivers left still interest you? Odell doesn't seem to have much left, but maybe Tyler Boyd, but it's slim pickings. Yes, it is. Which is why the Bills' big strike for a wide receiver is either going to be via trade up or trade. I would anticipate, you know, I don't think that they want to commit a bunch of money to a wide receiver, especially without seeing the draft first. It's probably more of a, let's see what the draft has for them, what ends up happening if they are able to get a player they are really excited about at the wide receiver position. And then if that doesn't happen, or let's say the cost of trading for a guy like Brandon Ayuk becomes salvageable or somewhat palatable from a Bills perspective, then maybe before the draft. But at this point, I think a lot of teams just want to see what happens in the draft and what they wind up with. It's one of the things I asked Brandon Bean let's see, what day was it? Wednesday, when they made the trade, was why a future pick as opposed to a pick this year? And he's like, well, around this time when you've done so much work, a lot of these teams are at, you know, really 3 weeks before the draft, they're really committed to that draft class. And the idea of trading away a pick to do it is not as doable at this point. Like it obviously opens up once things start flying on draft day to where teams know what's happening in front of them. The allure of, you know, the unknown isn't as prevalent. So that's why right now things are probably in a bit of a holding pattern. So, and so he got a second round pick for Stephon Diggs in 2025, which could end up being a pretty good one. Okay. Keith writes in, is the seat hot for Bean and Sean? They really should be if they can't piece this thing together, I think is what you meant to write. I don't think the seat is hot for either one of those guys. I think if the Bills missed the playoffs this past year, Sean McDermott may have felt a little bit more pressure. I just don't see it right now. And especially with some of the veterans that they have moved on from, I think the overall expectation is that while they still could challenge for a Super Bowl this year, it might not be the year for them to do it, but they're still going to be competitive. Just like it was last year, I think we're a year away from him being on the hot seat. If they miss the playoffs, then maybe things start to get a little bit warmer in 2025. But my guess is both of these guys are here as long as Josh Allen is healthy and they keep competitive. My guess is both of these guys are here through the debut of the new Highmark Stadium across the street. There's always that piece of the puzzle that you have to consider. The fact that they have a new stadium coming up and going into it with one of the most winningest coaches in franchise history, one of the most winningest GMs in franchise history, and what could be the greatest quarterback they've ever had in franchise history to open up a brand new facility. I don't know that they're going to want to rock the boat unless things just completely unravel here. So no, I do not think the seat is hot for either one of those guys. All right, that's going to do it for me. Thank you everyone for jumping in on this extended version of the Buffalo Beat. This has been the live room episode after the Stephon Diggs trade. If you missed most of the episode, or you just joined in late, you can listen to the replay of it anywhere the podcasts are found, whether it be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or right here on the Athletic app, you will be able to find the replay. But yeah, thanks everyone for jumping in with your questions. Thanks for going through and being able to fight through some of the technical difficulties. But I think we got to a lot of good conversations. So the next time I will speak with you will be next week when we get deeper into draft research and draft theory. We all know I love draft theory. And we will get closer and closer to see what ends up happening on April 25th when the first round of the NFL draft begins. All right. My name is Joe Pascalia. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will talk to you next time. See you then.